Hello and welcome to episode 5 of The Fast Fill. Fast Fill is a new podcast series sponsored by Natural Gas Vehicles for America, the national organization dedicated to the development of a growing, profitable, and sustainable marketplace for vehicles powered by natural gas and biomethane, and for promoting the use of more natural gas in transportation. I'm your host, Dan Gage, president of NGV America, and joining me today are Joanna Underwood and Matt Tomek of Energy Vision, a leading independent 501c3 organization focused on the technology, policy, and economic elements associated with the production and use of biomethane or renewable natural gas. We're continuing our conversation we began last episode on the benefits and potential of renewable natural gas or biomethane. I should say revenue, right? Because that's another whole component of this. But welcome both. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. So, Matt, let's start with you first. Just for folks who maybe didn't listen to our previous episode or might now want to listen to it in reverse order, tell us a little bit, remind our listeners what RNG is, renewable natural gas or biomethane. What is it and why is it so important? And what's the necessity? Why should we be capturing it? And how is its reuse so impactful?
Sure. So renewable natural gas, also known as biomethane in Europe, is essentially the refined form of biogas. So biogas is made from a range of organic material as it breaks down, whether it be food waste, whether it be wastewater, agricultural material, or even things like biomass, woody waste. Essentially anything that is organic in nature and, can be refined into nearly pure methane. Mm-hmm. So with that criteria, it allows for displacement of fossil natural gas use in all of the same infrastructure that fossil gas relies on, whether it be pipelines to move it around, or refueling stations and vehicles or equipment that run on natural gas. But of course, the big difference is renewable natural gas is not extracted from underneath the ground. Right. It's produced daily from these materials that are on the surface. And that's really a big difference between the two and a reason why we've long felt that this is a key component in moving toward a sustainable transportation future, because it allows for us to start to transition away from fossil fuels and to, as we talked about on the last episode, start to take advantage of these waste streams that have long been mismanaged and created or added to the climate challenge that we now face.
Joanna, you mentioned in the last episode, you were talking about how your work as an environmental activist and involved in so many different, clean air, clean water concerns, that you were on a trip to Scandinavia and you saw buses that were public buses, transit buses that were being fueled by renewable natural gas, and that piqued your interest. What were some of the characteristics of why Scandinavia, even today, and I think we'll get into some of the numbers in a little bit, but even today, Scandinavia is overwhelmingly capturing and utilizing this resource that so many other parts of the world just let go to waste and actually negatively impact the climate. How is that? Why is that? Any idea?
Oh, thoughts? I've spent quite a bit of time in Norway in my life, mm-hmm. hiking in Norway, and the environmental ethic amongst Norwegians is rather extraordinary. They feel very bound to the earth. They feel very attached to the mountains, to hiking, to fishing. And they started early addressing these issues and have always been ahead. When I got on the first, these are bright red buses in Oslo, and mm-hmm. they are really quite beautifully clean and new. You smell nothing, even though the fuel is made from the gases from their sewage treatment plant. But I was just blown away by the fact that they had taken a resource that's you think of sort of disgusting and throw it away and get rid of it, and they turned it into this wonderful fuel. And that just was enormously exciting to me, especially since we almost didn't have it in this country. It was a brand new idea. And when you're looking for a resource that will be meeting the criteria of sustainability from a renewable source, well, the more people you have, the more organic waste you're going to have in this world. Something that is not polluting. When you burn this fuel in the new natural gas engines called near zero engines, they emit almost none of the health-threatening pollutants that we worry so much about, the particulates, the nitrogen oxides, the sulfur oxides, ozone. It's enormously clean. And from the point of view of greenhouse gases, I think as we've discussed, you're taking methane from wastes on the surface that would otherwise escape as a potent greenhouse gas. It's 86 times more climate warming over a 20-year period than CO2, which everyone talks about as a greenhouse gas. So methane is maybe only 10%, but it's a potent 10%. If you can take that and put it to use instead of digging up methane gases from underground and releasing them, if you leave them under there, they're not bothering anyone. They're not creating any harm. But if you collect the ones on the surface, you're doing an extraordinary job of reducing greenhouse gases. And the Scandinavians and the Europeans in general have been very much ahead of us on using these clean fuels. They accept everywhere now in Europe that renewable natural gas is a very exciting opportunity. And when you look at the developing countries, when you look at India, when you look at China, they're both drowning in organic waste.
Right.
They urgently need to put this strategy to work.
Right. And I think we see when we look at Europe, they have a very different ethos or formula for how they're going to address some of the Paris Accord agreements, right? Milestones, goals, targets. They have set out a very ambitious greenhouse gas and emissions reduction schedule, but they haven't really dictated, the EU hasn't really dictated a technology. They're technology neutral. We seem in several states here in the U.S. to take the different approach that we're going to mandate a specific technology. And right now it's electrify everything, right? We're going to just use a zero emission electric vehicle or so-called zero emission electric vehicle. What do you think about some of those hurdles that we have here? And how do we educate lawmakers about some of the successes in Europe? Is it just a different approach to thinking, or are we just beholden to certain special interests that are funding some of these activities and these environmental activities on the ground here?
Well, we're much more beholden. I mean, we're much more subject to the power of the petroleum industry in this country than anywhere else in the world. I think the question you raised is a very important one, how you set your standards. And my own view from working on these issues in different settings is that you need to say what your goal is. Your goal is to have a renewable resource. Your goal is that it be non-polluting, that it be carbon-free. Those are your goals. And then let the technologies that most meet those goals be the ones that are given economic incentives by government to go ahead. Now, we're not doing that here. And when you talk about electrification, for example, there are wonderful benefits. Electric battery technology works very well in light-duty cars.
Sure.
It doesn't work very well in heavy-duty vehicles. It doesn't have the power. But also, electrification has other environmental issues which are not being discussed much. They talk about electrify everything in a lot of parts of the environmental movement. but there are issues that are not being given attention. One, the toxics that go into batteries and the effects on child labor and on toxification of resources that are in South America and in China. One is, in addition to that, how are you going to dispose of those batteries with those materials? Another one is really, where is the power coming from now that powers the batteries that are running these nice, clean cars on the roads? Well, 2/3 of it is still coming from fossil sources, because that's where power is generated in this country. 15% of our power comes from renewables, but the rest is still from nuclear or fossil sources. So these are the life cycle considerations. And if you think in terms of what your goals are, then you have to worry about all those things. When you look at electric power, you have to consider them also when you look at renewable natural gas. And so it's a real difference in how you're approaching it. Is your approach, what is our substantive goal for how we live in this world? And the other one is, what technologies can best allow us to get there? That's not what we're doing in the U.S. We tend to mandate technologies, and that's, I think, the wrong order.
I agree. Hey, Matt, so let's talk a little bit about this research education component. I mean, that's sort of the focus and priority of the organization. You've worked so hard to do that over the years, not just educating policymakers, but other people in the influence sector. What are some of the partnerships that you're working on today? Some of the challenges that you see in those, and who are you working with, and what's on your agenda right now? I know you had a successful event earlier this month, a milestone event.
Sure. So we certainly have a number of successful partnerships, ongoing long-term partnerships with government, with industry, to some extent with academia, and, you know, as well as others in the environmental community. So I'll start with the government side. I mean, we've been very fortunate to have a long-standing relationship with Argonne National Lab through the Department of Energy and through the Clean Cities Program. And since 2015 now, so the last 5 years, we've worked closely with the team there at Argonne to essentially track all operational and under development renewable natural gas projects. And I can assure you that is a very time-consuming process, but we've been able to get that done essentially on an annual basis, and it's allowed us to see the immense growth trajectory just in the past 5 years, from, you know, less than 60 projects producing RNG to now above 130. With another 80 to 100 under development. So we fully expect to see that exponential growth continue. On the government side, we've also been lucky to work closely with a number of states and state agencies, primarily in doing independent assessments of, you know, the potential for the RNG resource in a given jurisdiction. So in the last 4 or 5 years, we've done a lot with the state of Vermont. We did a study for the state of Colorado last year, who continues to look closely at both RNG and opportunities for policies that can incentivize and drive investment in clean fuel technology. And we're being in New York, we've got a long history of working closely with state agencies in New York, including NYSERDA. So that's all very, very good and productive. On the corporate side and the industry side, you know, we've been working really closely with some leading engineering firms, primarily in looking at municipalities. So as we've talked about before, almost every municipality has a wastewater facility and has some sort of relationship with a landfill. On the wastewater side, more and more, we're seeing municipalities have this aha moment where they may have been producing biogas for decades and just flaring it because, you know, the economics to capture and use it just weren't that compelling. And now they see all these examples across the country of municipalities, you know, capturing the gas and using it to either fuel their own vehicles or to sell the gas to other fleets. And it's, you know, a big economic winner and an environmental winner as well. So that's been a really productive partnership, and we continue to pursue a number of these opportunities. And then I would say on the environmental side of things, you know, we've had some challenges in engaging environmental groups because of concerns about renewable natural gas or this growing push toward electrifying everything. Mm-hmm. But I'll say we've had probably the best engagement and relationship here in New York with the League of Conservation Voters. And we're working very closely with them on an initiative to see a low carbon fuel standard, or as we're now calling it, a clean fuel standard, introduced in New York State. And as you probably know, New York last year passed what by most measures is the sort of the most aggressive, ambitious climate legislation in the country, and one of the most ambitious in the world, in the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of that process has been setting extremely ambitious targets, interim and long-term targets, in basically getting to, you know, net zero before mid-century. And so in looking at New York's emissions and emission sources, much like the national numbers, transportation is the largest single source at more than 30% of the state's annual emissions. And so we feel strongly, as do our partners, that a low carbon fuel standard like the program in place in California, as well as the clean fuel program in Oregon, really sets the best example and the path toward creating incentives and creating a market for investment in all non-petroleum technologies, certainly including renewable natural gas, but also electrification, also fuel cell, essentially anything that can help bring down the carbon intensity of the fuels that we rely on day in and day out. So I would say that that's a sampling of our activities, and certainly the LCFS push in New York is a major priority going into 2021.
Remember a couple of years ago, I was in Albany in the Capitol with some members, and we were starting to sort of talk about an LCFS program in New York and what natural gas vehicles, the impact they could have on clean air. And then when you refuel them with renewable natural gas, you know, the greenhouse gas impact. And we ran into each other. You were there with a group, I think, from Cornell and doing your own round of meetings. And we started talking about this. And since then, that whole effort has certainly grown. But I know we've had some conversations. And as you know, I'm a native New Yorker and spend a good part of my career working in New York politics. But I was still surprised going, doing those visits that day, the number of legislators who, when they heard us utter the word natural gas, just said, "Nope, stop. I can't consider that." You know, when we start out talking about biomethane, then there was of interest. We talked about waste management. There was of interest. So I guess my question to you both, Joanna and Matt, knowing sort of the challenges that we have on the two coasts, right? California or New York, you know, sort of the Acela corridor here from Washington up into Massachusetts. How should we be, do you have any hints or suggestions for our listeners on how we approach that conversation with legislators who don't want to talk about fossil fuels and petroleum or big oil, how do we share that narrative? And, you know, do you have any, you know, we don't want to leave with a glass chin, my grandpa used to say. So what are your thoughts on that? What should we be doing as an industry that we're not on that front?
I think we've got a question of terminology. The word natural gas in New York State particularly means fracking.
Right.
And the environmental powers that be fought for years to get fracking to be illegal in New York State, and they succeeded.
Right.
But within a month after they achieved this considerable victory, they proposed a new frontier, which was, we don't want to have any natural gas that has been fracked anywhere come into New York State.
Right. The anti-pipeline crowd, right?
Anti-pipeline crowd. And the difficulty with that is, what else have you got? Here we have, with renewable natural gas coming through the pipeline, you might think that there would be tremendous enthusiasm for saying, well, let's just ship more and more renewable natural gas through the pipeline system and use it here. You can track the molecules, the atoms going through the pipeline. You know what was put in, where the production occurred, and you know what's coming out at the use end. Why wouldn't you think this was a terrific thing? The battle has been that the word natural gas for many environmental groups and for many politicians only means fracking, and also means methane, which of course is what natural gas is made out of. How do you battle it? I think, to me, it's going back to, what are our goals? What are our goals, not just what is a technology? If our goal is renewable natural gas is renewable. And New York has one of the heaviest waste loads of any state in the country. So the opportunities to use it are enormous. I think we're the fourth largest waste producing state. You want something non-polluting? Okay. Use this fuel in vehicles especially, and you have a tremendous impact on healthier conditions in cities on the ground. You're eliminating those emissions. Greenhouse gases, we've talked about the fact that this is a fuel that is maybe zero carbon or net carbon negative, because more of the greenhouse gases are collected in producing the fuel than using it. So you would think that the best argument would be, what are our goals, and to what extent does this particular fuel meet them? And if it meets them, we want more of that fuel. That's not where it's gone yet. And still, we have to work very hard. And by the way, when we have long, detailed meetings with people about what RNG is and its qualities, we very often win them over. The Senate in New York State is won over to thinking that this is a wonderful thing. In the Assembly, there are some leadership people, representatives that are listening to the environmental groups that say electrify everything, and they don't want to talk about anything else. So I don't know how you win, except that you do what everyone has always done, shoe leather. You go meet with the politicians. You quietly explain things to them in a non-technical way. You go to the media. You tell your story. We've just published. Matt just wrote a wonderful op-ed, which was about, should we electrify everything? And it really addresses the concerns we have about electrification as well as its benefits. And it's a comparison. I don't know that there's any secret as to how you do it. You try to win people over. You try to show them what the benefits are. And you keep at it.
Matt, that op-ed was in Green Biz, correct?
Yes, it was. It ran Thursday on October 8th.
Okay. Is that available for our listeners? Could they get that through your website at energy-vision.org?
Yes, it's right on the front page.
That's great. Joanna, did you ever think back all those years ago when you got on an RNG bus in Oslo that you would find or that you would be present in New York City still working on these issues all these years later and hearing the announcement that you did from the New York MTA earlier this year?
That announcement was thrilling to us. And there's an example of the fact that we worked on that. Matt, being in touch with people at MTA, he was bringing city leaders to the depots where they had natural gas buses running on fossil gas. The conversation went on for almost 4 years, but ultimately the MTA decided to take its 700 plus buses now burning fossil gas and move to renewable natural gas. And that's almost a revolutionary shift.
It is.
It's saving them money, by the way. The fuel is almost cheaper. It's cutting their carbon emissions from those buses by 40,000 tons a year. And it's setting an example for bus fleets all over the country. Santa Monica has a bus fleet that's running on renewable natural gas. LA Transit has got a couple of hundred buses that are. But this really is the biggest transit system in the country. And when they made that decision after all these years, it was nothing but thrilling to us. My view, where the changes are going to happen, Dan. When you start on these issues, you don't know. My view is you just keep following the evidence, looking at where the benefits are, looking at where the obstacles are, because you don't want to give people a false sense that something's terrific, but there's something hidden under the rug that isn't terrific. You want to be talking about it, and then you see where it goes. And to me, and all the issues we've ever worked on or that I've ever worked on, you just keep putting one foot in front of the other. And also you find that industry has a tremendous capacity to innovate. And there's, when you get in and study what it is that industries could be doing to make change happen, you see there's a tremendous amount of innovation and innovative work going on. And the question is, how can you capture that? How can you let people know about it and see if that can be replicated in other places?
Yeah, and you mentioned the New York MTA decision recently, and the contract they signed, it was with an NGV America member, Clean Energy, and their Redeem product. But we, as you know, represent basically all of the major fuelers are RNG and CNG fuelers in the U.S., and they are aggressively working with multiple fleets. We also have fleet members and gas utilities and RNG producers to get as much of this product as they can out into the pipeline system to start fueling, replacing the traditional conventional natural gas. I know we did we do an annual report every year in conjunction and in partnership with the RNG Coalition. And nationally last year, 39% of all on-road natural gas motor fuel was RNG. That's a 300% increase just in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. And if you look, you mentioned Santa Monica, you look at California alone, last year, 77% of all their on-road natural gas motor fuel was RNG. And in California, it's been the majority, right? They've been using more RNG instead of conventional natural gas as a motor fuel since 2016. So, you know, we know it works. We know it's beneficial. And our members, our fleet members that we're working with, they try desperately to get as much of it as they can. Let's talk a little bit about blends. And that's another option too. You talked about the molecules of methane. But just the impact that we could have on the entire natural gas system, whether it's being used for motor fuel or residential heating and cooking, or even commercial and industrial use, if we can green that system and blend that gas in just small percentage, doesn't even have to be 100% RNG, we could have some substantial greenhouse gas emissions impact on that as well, correct?
Well, Matt's been looking at the use of RNG as a residential fuel with Southern California Gas. Why don't you comment on that, Matt? That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a major component of the recent Green Biz article, which certainly encouraged folks to take a look at that. And I mean, I think it's important to note that, I mean, our view has long been that based on the research, RNG is not a panacea, nor is electrification, nor is hydrogen. I mean, it's going to take this suite of options to get us where we need to go in terms of decarbonizing all sectors of the economy. But RNG is one that's here and now. I think it's important for us. I mean, part of our mission has always been to look at what is commercial cost-effective today, but under-deployed for whatever reason. And so RNG is right in the sweet spot of, you know, the technology is well-developed, it's proven, it's commercially viable with the policies in place, and it's only becoming, you know, more attractive from an economic standpoint. That said, you're right, Dan. Even if we're talking about, call it 10 to 20% of current natural gas demand that could be offset or displaced with RNG, that alone is a massive reduction in greenhouse gases across the system. And as I said before, our view is it's going to take this whole suite of options and to really aggressively pursue all the technologies and solutions that we have available to us if we're really going to tackle the climate challenge and the existential threat it poses. And really, I think where we may differ from other environmental groups philosophically is we feel that we need to be acting as quickly and aggressively as possible today and for the foreseeable future, whereas others seem to be looking at 2050 and saying, if, you know, a technology or an option doesn't comply with our 2050 goal, then we shouldn't be doing it now. And I think that's where a lot of the disagreement is taking place, including in New York and elsewhere. But we feel very strongly that the science and the data and the research speaks for itself, that capturing this methane that's going to be produced anyway and using it to displace fossil fuels, whether it be diesel in vehicles or the natural gas that we're using across the country for various purposes, is a very positive thing. And if it can be done cost effectively and can be ramped up, then we need to be pursuing it. And so I think that's how we talk about it, and that's how we'll continue to view this, you know, this piece of the overall puzzle, as it were.
There are companies that are evolving and being very creative in the space. You mentioned earlier the company Clean Energy Fuels in California. Well, their original goal was all about fossil gas and providing it as a vehicle fuel. They were the first, and they were moving right along. Well, what's happened in the last decade? That company has come to appreciate the fact that renewable natural gas is chemically the same, but a much better fuel. It speaks to a truly sustainable future. And now they've set a goal that by 2045, everything they deliver to a customer,
2025
will be renewable natural gas, not fossil gas. And that means they'll be meeting the California goal of, was it 50 or 80% reduction in greenhouse gases? They'll be meeting the goal 20 years early. And that's a company that has simply decided it's in their business as well as society's interest to move in this direction. So companies are picking up the ball and moving on it in a very exciting way.
So one last question for you then, Joanna. In this new age, Facebook, Tesla, TikTok, right? In an era of business and technology disruption, is RNG a disruptor? And do you have to be a disruptor to do good?
I don't think it's a disruptor. I think it's a very simple process. It's not something mystical and high tech. It's simply taking all this organic material, putting it in a tank, letting the gases be collected as they are created by the waste, processing the gases. It's not rocket science. it's just something that makes a lot of sense in the use of a new resource that we've been used to throwing away. So it's a disruptor for people that don't want to move away from fossil fuels, but it's not really a disruptor in any other way. It's finding its way into the society right now.
Thanks, both of you. I really appreciate your time today and for this episode and the one prior. I think some of the thoughts and comments and certainly the history, Joanna, is really enlightening. So I appreciate you both being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan.
And thanks to you all, our listeners, for tuning in. For more information on NGV America's work, you can visit our website at ngvamerica.org. There you can sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can find out more about Energy Vision and the document that Joanna and Matt referenced, the Gen and Green Biz it was, and its work, the Energy Vision's work, more on its work and research at energy-vision.org. Please share comments with us on today's podcast via email at info@ngvamerica.org. And be sure to follow us on all your favorite social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. On behalf of Energy Vision's Joanna Underwood and Matt Tomick and the entire NGV America team, I'm Dan Gage. Thanks again for joining us. You just experienced the Fast Fill. Until next time.